From CBC Podcasts, I'm David Ridgen, and this is The Next Call.
Hello, Evidence Locker listeners. Today, we're speaking with someone who needs no introduction. Through his tireless work on unsolved cases, this investigative journalist has brought people to justice with his work. You'll know him from the CBC podcast, Someone Knows Something. Our guest, of course, is David Ridgen. Hey, David, how are you today?
I'm great. Thanks for having me on.
Well, thank you for doing this for us. I guess, just to get right into it, you usually travel and visit the people involved in the cases you cover. But then, with lockdown and current travel restrictions, The Next Call was born. If you have to compare having a cup of coffee in someone's living room to a phone call, would you say that people tend to speak more freely if they're not face-to-face? Or is it the opposite that happens?
Well, it's interesting. Actually, let's back up a little bit. So The Next Call, it kind of came about before COVID started, actually. And it was an idea that came about because I didn't want to replace Someone Knows Something. I wanted to find another way to address a lot of the different cases that people were sending me from all over the world, actually, on a weekly basis. And I was wondering how I could do it in a more efficient manner. Phone calls came up. I was discussing it sort of with some close friends and some allies, and decided when COVID came around that it was a perfect opportunity to pitch it to the CBC, and they went for the idea immediately. So actually, the genesis of it was a couple of years before COVID started. So it's just kind of happenstance in some ways, I guess, and it works, as I think the first few episodes of Next Call have shown. But meeting people in person, you get to see their facial movements, you get to compare what they're saying with how they're standing, you get to greet their pets, you get to see them in their house, you get to visit them in places they're comfortable in, and that helps them to speak freely. You can use your own body language to relax people and your voice. But I found that in the COVID era, we've all learned to distance, we've all learned that we have to talk on the phone to people more often. And we have other issues going on that, you know, we have to explore through our anxieties about the virus and the vaccines and the population as a whole and what are we supposed to do. So people, I think, have learned to emote in almost a more succinct way on the phone. And I think that it's actually captured that moment perfectly. We've come along with this investigative kind of technique at exactly the time when it needed to be here. And people were much more open to talking. I found in all my phone calls and all my interviews so far that people are very revealing of information that they have. I don't find anybody trying to be, you know, furtive. Once I find them and once I get them, finding people is more difficult sometimes on a cell phone because there's no yellow pages or white pages anymore. So once you find people and get them on the phone, I think talking on the phone actually has some benefits over meeting people in person. That's not always true, as I think people will hear in the podcast actually itself in Next Call. I'm not going to reveal anything about that. But it's been successful. It's been successful, and it's come around at a time when it worked. So hopefully that answers your question.
It definitely does. It seems like it was meant to be. And it's nice to hear that it is a bit more streamlined on the phone, because I would assume that to create report, it would take a little bit longer when, you know, there's still like just some distance in between. But if people are willing to talk, I mean, that's a lovely thing. And I think you're right. I think COVID's definitely brought us to be a little bit more intimate within a distance, if that even makes any sense.
No, it does. It totally makes sense. Yeah, I think everybody will instantly understand what you mean there. Right. So
my next question, complimentary to Someone Knows Something, which deep dives into single cases, and that averages about 5 to 10 episodes per season. The Next Call explores variety of cases, right?
That's the idea. The idea is that we're looking at, I'm investigating about 6 at the same time right now. And that's ludicrous, but it does work. And the thing with Next Call, in comparison with Someone Knows Something, like, what we don't get is the time it takes for me to travel, all the sort of chessboard of organizing my record sessions across country and across continent, and many trips and different kinds of things like that. So I save a lot of time and travel and kind of coordination. But all the back end is the same, like gathering audio on the phone, transcription, scripting, lawyering, going through journalistic standards and practices. You know, the whole routine is exactly the same. I mean, we try to, it's much more linear. It's a much more linear kind of chronology in the script writing. There's much more process, actually, investigative process evident in the next call, I think. My thinking and things like that, which people have reassured me they actually are interested in.
Sure.
And it's been interesting. It's been interesting storytelling. I mean, I've tried to make a cinematic sort of narrative, an arc that, you know, that has a cinematic arc over the series and also within the episode. And it's different when it's a more chronological, sort of closer to real time, almost feeling in Next Call. But it kind of ends up being a very similar kind of process in construction after you've gathered all the tape.
Okay, yeah. I mean, I think you've answered the next question, but I do want to pose it to you anyway. With the new format, would you ever consider cases farther abroad? I mean, you know, like in Somebody Knows Something season 3, you went as far as Mississippi. Does the Next Call have that possibility open to it just organically, you think?
Oh yeah, no. I mean, I'm open to doing a case anywhere. I mean, even if there's a translator involved, I'd be interested in trying that, which I think would be actually fascinating. But yeah, I'm interested. I mean, Someone Knows Something has audience and listeners around the world, and the idea is to get into as many years as possible in order to find the person who has the information. And there are cases that have come to me that have international components. People have moved on, traveled, suspects have left or fled, we can say, countries and gone to other places. And it is, you know, I have received cases that do involve those kinds of interplays. And I mean, there's nothing to say that I can't get out of the house and off the phone and into the field once certain things happen, or if there's a certain situation that happens where I feel I have to be there. This is not a replacement for Someone Knows Something. Next Call has never been that. I'm always,
sure.
I'm still working on Someone Knows Something. And at the same time, I've got season 7 in play, and I have a very small team, but we're able to, you know, juggle all these balls, and it hasn't gone anywhere. Someone Knows Something is still there.
You know, I think you touched on this, in your initial introduction of the Next Call, but just to revisit, how do you pick your cases for this particular project? Is it from the public or families writing in, or is it things you already know about that you're interested in yourself?
It's a bit of everything, actually. Kind of answered it there. I mean, when families themselves approach, we're always very interested because it means that they're already on board with whatever they're gonna, you know, whatever the process is. They must have known about the process by listening to Someone Knows Something. They know what they're getting into. And those are always very interesting cases when family members approach. So we're looking for passionate family members, people that have been trying to investigate or wanting to investigate but haven't, and then willing to go into those dark areas and confront those kind of spaces. We're looking for documents. We're looking for investigative files that might be available. It's always great to be able to refer to actual investigative documents and what somebody said before so that I can compare it to what they're saying now. And also police, we're looking to see if police will cooperate or if they're interested in helping. It's not always a barn burner if they don't, but it's nice to know that there's maybe a retired investigator who's willing to talk, even off record, to talk to me and sort of fill me in on some details. And we're always interested in whether there's a perpetrator that people have in mind, or a suspect or suspects, viable suspects that people have in mind that we can go talk to. All of these come into play, and also where it is. We're not going to do all our cases in Toronto. We're not going to do all our cases in, you know, the main city filled with white people. You know, we're going to be going and trying to do a varied cases that represent the population, Canadian Broadcasting Corporation's publicly funded, et cetera. So we have to represent on that front. And I'm right now working on a case in the Yukon as well on the phone. It's been a pretty exciting format.
You know, the first case of the Next Call, it reports on the unsolved disappearance of Melanie Ethier from a small Ontario town about, what was it, more than 25 years ago. Would you be able to tell our listeners a little more about that case?
Yes. Melanie Ethier was 15 years old. She lived in New Liskeard, Ontario, a small town in sort of northeastern Ontario, right on the Ottawa River, where I'm actually standing right now, except further upriver. And September 1996, the end of September, Saturday night, it was September 28th, 1996. Melanie went with some friends to a house to watch a movie. Unfortunately, it was a Jean-Claude Van Damme movie. And the movie ended, and Melanie left on September 29th, early morning hours, about 2 o'clock, reportedly. And she left to walk home on her own. And she was never seen again. So no trace of her ever found. The house that she was walking to, her home that she lived in at the time, was about a 15-minute walk away at the most. I've walked that route several times myself, actually. I've done it on Google Maps, and then I actually went up because I had to go do it. And that's basically it. I mean, so I've interviewed the friends, I've interviewed family, I've interviewed people who have come forward. Céline Nethier, Melanie's mother, has been instrumental in prodding police and bringing forward tips that people have brought to her. And so I've been working with her every case I work on, with whether it's SKS or Next Call, is with victims' family members. I wouldn't work on a case just on my own. And it's been a pleasure working with her, and I'm still working with her. I just got a text as you were, as I was trying to actually get into the interview here.
Oh man, well, that's good to know that it's ongoing, because it keeps things, you know, compelling for us as an audience as well. But I do want to thank you for your time, David. That's all I got for you today. But this is awesome that we were able to take the opportunity to just have this quick chat with you. And thank you so much for doing this.
Thanks, guys. Talk again. Take care. Bye-bye.
To learn more about The Next Call, go to CBC Podcasts or listen wherever you're listening right now. You can find links in the show notes, but don't take our word for it. Here's a sneak peek of what you can expect.
And he was nervous, just saying she has to be somewhere. And he had scratches on his arm. And I asked him, how'd you get scratches? Well, I'm in the woods looking.
From CBC Podcasts.
All right, leave me a detailed message. I'll get back to you. Thanks.
I'm David Ridgen, and this is The Next Call, a new podcast series where I follow leads as far as I can take them. I'm calling about the Melanie Ethier case. I'm making a podcast for the Canadian Broadcasting Corporation. And...
well, he was pacing back and forth.
Did he ever deny killing Melanie?
No, which is a good point to bring up. I don't know why he would have never said that.
Trying to find the truth while working with victims' family members.
This is all facts. This is... like what I totally believe in my gut to be the truth.
I can feel it in your voice and your excitement.
Yeah, I'm
so
shaky.
In September 1996, Melanie Ethier disappeared from northeastern Ontario, and almost 25 years later, her mother Céline is still searching for answers.
Every day has been consuming and putting all her energy in finding Melanie. I feel like we've been living on one day. Like, we haven't moved forward.
It's so hard. You know, so many stories come up and keep coming up. You know, it's been almost 25 years, and they seem plausible. But whether or not they're true is another thing, and I would hate.
She's an old hick town, then, and that's never going to change. People might get better, but it's still an old hick town.
I follow every tip and every theory, talking to police...
would like nothing more than to solve this case, and you know, I think with your assistance we will have a greater chance at doing so.
Finding eyewitnesses.
A white van stopped me, and there were two men in the van, and it kind of scared me, so I backed up.
And confronting suspects. It's David Ridgen calling again. I received your message. I don't really appreciate your answer, but I'm willing to talk to you. So give me a call anytime. Investigations that could break wide open with The Next Call.
I do want justice. I don't want them to walk freely and live about their life. I don't. I don't have a sister anymore.
I'm David Ridgen, and this is The Next Call. Find us everywhere you get your podcasts and on the CBC Listen app.